This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Nunes retains, Borg withdraws, Cejudo impresses, and Rafael Dos Anjos, is he next in line at welterweight? Our guest today does not think so. Outspoken UFC welterweight Colby Covington joins the show to discuss his beefs with Rafael Dos Anjos, as well as his teammate, Tyron Woodley, of all people, and his upcoming fight in Sao Paulo, the backyard of Demian Maia. A third title fight added to UFC 217 as Joanna Jędrzejczyk defends her strap against Rose Namajunas. And Luke Rockhold looks to get back into the mix, fighting for the first time since dropping the middleweight strap to Bisping over a year ago this weekend in Pittsburgh against David Branch. Joe, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good, man. I'm always jealous of yours, though, because you're always at the fights and I get to follow through messaging you. So I get a little upset, to be honest with you.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm in the back watching on a TV. So other than being in the arena.
So we're in the same situation.
Well, but you're in a better situation. You're like front row when you're calling these fights.
Yeah, but you get to meet these athletes. You get to talk to them and hang out, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it's cool to get to meet them.
You're downplaying how cool it is, Aaron. Come on.
Well, I'm just trying to put it into perspective for you because you've got the cooler gig. Yeah. You get to sit cage side. Yeah. And the level of fighting is just as high level. It's just a different rule set.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, kickboxing is my love, my true love. But, man, I've gone to a few UFC events, and it's just the atmosphere is amazing. So I still want to be there for UFCs as well. I'm a combat sports fan. I want to be everywhere there's fighting.
I will say Edmonton really delivered in terms of the fans. They were coming in early. It was pretty full early on.
And they were supportive of all the Canadian athletes as well. Every time that I saw the Canadian athletes out, they were cheering, and they were, you know, especially with Gavin Tucker when he came out. It was impressive.
But further than that, they also cheered for fighters to beat Canadians. Like, they were respectful overall.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yeah, like Rick Glenn won, and they cheered for Rick Glenn, even though he beat a guy that a lot of people thought was the next big thing in Canada, and Gavin Tucker. And we'll talk a little bit about that fight in a bit.
Yeah, we need to talk about that one.
Yeah, but let's start with Ray Borg. I mean, he pulls out less than 48 hours before UFC 215 with a viral illness. Do you think that the UFC should give him a title shot? Should he still be the guy that fights for the title?
Well, it's an illness, and if it was missing weight again, I would understand the UFC stripping him from this opportunity. But, man, sickness is something that happens. Us combat sports athletes, we put our body through so much stress. We put, you know, our whole life and energy into this. And fight week, when our immune system is down, we're cutting all this weight, it's very easy to get sick. And, you know, I know on our last show I talked about it, but, man, I got sinusitis every time I fought, and I constantly battled with it. So I know Nunez, in her post-fight interview, she had to back out because of it last time with her fight with Valentina, but she's going to actually have the surgery to get, I guess it's her...
To help it.
Yeah, to help whatever it is.
So that it doesn't come back as frequently.
Yeah, so, oh well. But it's definitely something that happens along a lot of athletes, and it's going to continue to happen.
Well, with Borg, I mean, he said that he didn't even start cutting the weight, so it wasn't even weight cutting. The illness didn't come as a result of weight cutting. Well, just the doctor said you're not in good enough condition to cut the weight for this fight. Like, you can't even proceed
because the
illness
stress,
is that bad.
Though, right? It's got to be. It's so stressful. You're fighting DJ, you know, in the biggest chance of your life. Yeah, it's a lot of stress. And with stress, you know, your immune system becomes, you know, suppressed, and any little sickness and boom, there you go. There's your sinus infection.
You know, on social media, I posted a clip of his workout where he looked really good. He was really fast. He was striking well. And then the next day people said, oh, well, obviously he's fine because look at this video. And I think that's pretty unfair. You know, I think people need to understand that athletes are never 100% going into a fight. Like, if you say, oh, how are you feeling going into a fight? An athlete will always say they're 100%, but there's always something.
You have to. You always have to. It's because the fighting plays mind games with you. You have to be so confident. A lot of times you do have to lie to yourself to tell yourself you're going to be good. There's been times in my training camp where I literally couldn't get off a couch, but I had to lie to myself and tell myself I'm good, I'm recovering, I'm getting stronger. But I think other fighters should understand. And I know Donald Cerrone came out and was calling him out for it, saying, like, oh, I would have fought. All my guys would have fought. Yeah. And I mean, it's an illness, and he has very few opportunities to fight the best in the world, and he wants to be 100%. So, no, I don't think he should lose his shot.
Yeah, I think it's going to be rescheduled for next month. That's what the rumor is. And I think that if that card was good, though, if UFC 216 was a little bit stronger at the top, I mean, the co-main is Derek Lewis versus Verdum, which is a good fight, but if you're going to buy tickets to an event, you typically want there to be two title fights. So,
absolutely.
And also, you want to have insurance, because if anything happens with Kevin Lee Ferguson leading up,
Well, it seems like a lot of changes.
Exactly. This is the third time this year that a main or co-main event has fallen off within 48 hours of a pay-per-view. And think of how few pay-per-views there have been.
And I saw a tweet, too. I think, I don't know who he was related to, DJ, but something they're coming out about him not getting paid or something like that.
He hasn't gotten paid yet, yes.
Yeah, that's very...
He didn't weigh in. I mean, I remember at the weigh-ins, I said to the PR guys, is Demetrius expected to weigh in? And they said no, which is never a good sign.
Well, I'm sure he would still get a show pay, right?
You would think so. You would hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so.
You know what? He's got good management. He's managed by Front Row Management. First Round Management, which is Malki Kawa and Abe Kawa. And they're really good. So I don't think that they're going to let him walk away from the table.
I hope not.
He was ready to go. I mean, he was there. He made the trip.
Yeah.
So I think he'll get paid. And I think that if they reschedule for next month, you know, he'll get paid again.
It's not that bad, but I'm sure he wants it to be over with, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, he's taken so much scrutiny leading up to this fight also by turning down the Dillashaw fight, demanding to fight Ray Borg, and now Ray Borg falls ill.
It's just prolonging his path, right? But, I mean, I hope after this fight, now that he has the longest defending streak, he decides to start taking those super fights. That's my opinion. Hope he takes it. Hope he steps up, which I think he will now that he has the streak.
So, you know, I haven't tweeted this out or anything, but I went to the airport after the event on Sunday morning, and I saw Ray Borg there. He was right, like a couple people in front of me in line to check baggage. And I said, you know, Ray, how are you? And he waved, and I said, how are you feeling? You know, are you feeling better? He said, you know, a little bit. He seemed really bummed out, obviously, by what had transpired. I said, you know, hopefully we see you next month. And he said, yeah, I hope so, too. So his hope is that it's going to be rebooked
for a month from now. For sure, he hopes that. And I think what he's really worried about is what people and the fans are thinking about him. And I know he came out on social media with some big words, like he was saying something along like, it's not back-to-back, you Fs act like I'm the only fighter on the roster who has messed up or has bad luck. So he's coming out, and I think he's calling out like the Cowboys and all those other fighters for calling him, you know, less of a man because of backing out.
And he said it wasn't his choice. The doctors didn't clear him.
Yeah.
And if the doctors don't clear you, you can't sign a waiver and just do it.
And usually, if you think sports doctors, they'd want you and encourage you to fight.
Especially the UFC doctor.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be liable like that. So it must have been a serious sinus infection. So, hey, you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm sure he wants it more than anybody else.
You know, the thing that annoyed me the most about it was not that Borg pulled out, but that they didn't replace him with Cejudo. Cejudo's sitting there on the card. You would have thought that the reason they had Cejudo versus Hayes on the card was so that if anything happened with the main event, that one of them could step in. And from speaking to Henry Cejudo multiple times, he says that, you know, they bounced the idea around, but he was never given the call. They never called him and said, can you do this? So whether Demetrius said, no, I'm not going to fight Cejudo again, or, you know, I didn't train for him and turned it down, I was unable to ask Demetrius Johnson about it, because when Demetrius Johnson came to me, he said, all I'm doing is making a statement. I'm not going to take any questions.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy Cejudo didn't take it, because I feel he just performed so well that he's only going to get that much better from when he meets DJ. So I'm kind of happy it didn't happen.
Well, what we need to remember about Cejudo is that he's only been fighting for 4 years.
4 years,
like, he was training strictly wrestling.
Yeah,
growing
it's impressive.
Up and making the Olympics, getting a gold medal. So given that he's a gold medalist, obviously his ability to learn concepts and learn how mixed martial arts is performed at the highest level is something that will take time, but he's going to get better and better at exponentially as time goes on. And that showed against Wilson Hayes. He destroyed Wilson Hayes, who's a guy that's very tough to finish.
Oh, it was incredible, man. He looked sharp. Like, he looked bigger. He looked, you know, more athletic. He looked more powerful. Whatever he's doing is definitely working.
Absolutely. I think that whether he's next in line is up for debate. I think that if he fights Sergio Pettis, that'll be a no-doubt next
like
contender fight. Yeah, and that was supposed to happen a couple months ago.
I think he's going to give Pettis a lot of problems after seeing this last fight. Man, he's going to give Pettis some problems. It's just he looks so much more bigger and physical than Pettis does, where I think he's going to be able to shut him down.
But you also have to remember with Pettis, he's like 22, 23, and these guys learn so much more at a younger age in the fight game and get better and better and better. So that'll be interesting, because I think if you put Pettis against Hayes, Pettis probably beats Hayes also.
But in that dominant fashion,
probably
the
not.
Way Cejudo
no,
did.
No, I mean,
I
he doesn't have any
so.
Finishes in the UFC.
Yeah, it's a little bit more strategic, pick you apart, where Cejudo just showed that power. And
let's move on to Amanda Nunes. Amanda Nunes retains the title. How did you score it? I seem to be in the minority in how I scored it, but you go ahead.
Well, my opinion is, I can't remember exactly round for round, but my overall opinion on it is that I had Amanda Nunes winning, to be honest with you. It was just her distance control was on, and every time you saw Valentina counter back, Nunez was just out of range. They weren't landing. And Valentina's that girl who everything she throws, she was out of that, ha ha, ha ha, ha ha. So it sounds like they're doing things, but it's really not. I mean, if you look at, I bet you if you watch and you shut the sound of the fight, the commentary off, you'll see that a lot of those punches weren't even landing. Was Nunez doing a lot of damage? No, but she was initiating the pace. She was controlling the octagon. So in my opinion, she won the fight.
You know, Joe, it's interesting you say that because I did watch it with no sound because I'm backstage and okay. We don't have the sound up high. I gave Nunez all five rounds.
Now I can see that.
Now, people said go back and watch the fourth because I was pretty distracted. When I'm back there, there's all kinds of stuff happening.
The fourth, I know, is the one in question everyone talks about.
So I think that Shevchenko might have won the fourth. Yeah. Because I was, you know, my attention was elsewhere during that round. The rounds that I watched in their entirety without distraction were 1, 2, and 5. And I thought for sure Nunez won those three rounds. And the third round I watched most of, and I thought that she won that round as well. But it was exactly what you said. I thought her distance control was right on because
perfect.
She was hitting Valentina at the end of her punches.
Yeah. Not doing much damage, but they were still landing.
Right. They were still landing. And I mean, what Shevchenko was doing wasn't doing much damage either.
Nothing.
She said, look at her face afterwards. And I was standing next to Nunez after the fight, and her face looked completely fine.
Yeah, post-fight interview, she looked fine.
Yeah, she looked completely fine. But I thought that her ability to cut off the cage, you know, she was the one who was the aggressor. She was walking down Shevchenko for the whole fight. She wasn't allowing Shevchenko to get corners, you know, to move laterally. And I thought that she beat Valentina at her own game. She was landing the better counter strikes. And when Valentina was throwing strikes, she was nowhere to be found.
Valentina's like, from a technical standpoint, she's a very, we call them tight strikers. She throws everything very short. She doesn't lengthen things up. She's very tight with her defense. Where Amanda's a little bit more free-flowing. She stays outside. She moves in and out a little bit more. And that style worked perfectly. And I know she was very adamant on really showing Valentina and the rest of the world that she can go five rounds, and she controlled the pace of the fight perfectly. Could there have been times where there was a little bit more energy burst to do a little bit more damage? Absolutely. But she said in her post-fight interview, her main job in this fight was to show everyone she can go five rounds.
Yeah, she said that to me directly, actually, that she wanted to show that now you can't make the case she can't go five rounds. She looked fine. She looked fresh at the end of the fifth round, too. And I think the reason why her cardio was failing her was in three-round fights, she was so aggressive in the early
rounds.
Absolutely.
She had this first-round finish streak that she wants to keep doing.
Right.
So she puts that energy out. And when she learns how to control that and she can do five rounds with those little bursts of, you know, energy, it's just going to make her that much more effective. And what she said that I really liked that in her post-fight conference, she said, this fight was for me. It wasn't for the fans. I needed to prove to myself I can do the five.
And I think versus Shevchenko, you know, not being economical with her energy early on is not going to work.
Yeah, that third round in the first fight, she took a beating.
Yeah, yeah, she'll get beaten up in the late rounds if she doesn't conserve her energy.
Absolutely.
So I do think that it was the perfect game plan for beating Shevchenko. Now, that being said, if people disagreed with the decision or if Shevchenko would have won, I would have disagreed with the decision, but I wouldn't have called it a robbery or anything.
Yeah,
it was a really close fight.
Do you think they should fight a third time?
I do.
Next,
I don't think
right
it should
away?
Be right away. No,
okay.
I don't think it should be right away.
Say, I don't want to see a third one right away.
I think Shevchenko needs to win two more fights probably, but the problem with that division is it's very shallow now because Nunes has beaten all the best people in it.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs between the 135 and the 145 division.
And 125.
And 125 even, yeah. I think they're going to just keep jumping around trying to get those bigger name fights.
Yeah. Like, I think Raquel Pennington is likely next.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I've been reading.
She's coming off that win against Misha Tate. She hasn't been active, but in terms of resume, she's probably the next best fighter. And then there's Juliana Pena still in the mix, even though she lost to Shevchenko. You know, given that Nunes beat Shevchenko and Nunes is still a champion, they've never fought, so that's an interesting matchup. Ketlin Vieira earlier on the card looked very good.
Wow, I couldn't believe that. She was getting dominated in the first round, and the way she came back in that second with that submission, I thought she was finished in the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looked incredible. Good jiu-jitsu.
Very good. And she trains with Andre Pederneras at Novo Uniao, so that's a very good camp. She's put her name on the map after this weekend. You know, most people hadn't heard of her, written her off against McMahon. People thought McMahon was going to be next in line with a win or up there. McMahon herself thought that she was going to be next in line with a win.
Yeah, but that girl really, what was her name there
Ketlin
again?
Vieira.
Yeah, she looked good. She stayed patient in that first round. She took a lot of big shots, but the way she came back in that second round and stayed composed and got that head and arm choke was nice. I was even impressed with the cheesecake there, Sarah Morris.
Yeah,
she looked pretty good too.
I felt bad that she didn't get the performance bonus because I interviewed her afterwards and she was crying. She needed that performance bonus. She used crowdfunding to fund her camp.
Really?
Like GoFundMe to help. She hasn't fought in 2 years to help fund her camp so she could fight. And she has a job at Canada Post sorting mail and delivering mail. Yeah. That she wants to be a full-time fighter, and it's hard to do.
Yeah, and it usually, like a lot of my friends who fought in the UFC and they got that performance bonus, that's when that money becomes life-changing.
Right.
You know, their initial UFC contracts aren't that high where it's life-changing money, but when you get that 50,000 performance bonus, like, that's really life-changing for these guys.
Job. Yeah. Yeah.
So these guys are allowed to invest in houses, you know, other things, pay off debt. So, it would be nice for these newer athletes to start making more, but I think they gave the performance bonus to who?
Dos Anjos. Cejudo.
Yeah.
And both those guys kind of
deserve it. It was a tough night, yeah.
I would have given it to Morris over RDA, but,
I know, hopefully UFC, I heard sometimes they give like side cash bonuses.
Yeah, discretionary bonuses.
Yeah, hopefully Cheesecake gets some.
Hasn't been happening much in the WME era from what I understand, but we'll have to see. But I think hopefully she's able to fight again soon and make some money. There's a card up in Winnipeg in December that will need Canadians, and it doesn't look like she was in any sort of bad shape after that fight. It was a quick fight. So
and that seems like it's a popular thing with the Canadian MMA fighters. They seem to be using them a lot just for the, you know, Canadian cards, which I understand, but hopefully I get these Canadian fighters fighting and cross-promoting over into the U.S.
We've got two of them on Pittsburgh this weekend, so that's a start.
Yeah, that's good. I know Jason Sago.
Yep, and Aubin Mercier is on the card as well.
Yeah, beautiful for Sago.
For sure. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I don't know how he's going to fare this weekend, but we'll talk about that a little bit later in our preview for UFC Pittsburgh. Let's look at Gavin Tucker. Now, this is what I wanted to discuss with you. On Twitter, a lot of people said that his corner doesn't care about him. They should throw in the towel. The referee wasn't doing anything to stop it. Tucker was still defending himself. I mean, it wasn't like he was knocked out at all, but at the same time, he was getting roughed up in that third round. A lot of people thought that his corner should have thrown in the towel. Now, as somebody who's been a fighter, is that something that, A, you've ever seen in the UFC mid-round? I don't think I've ever seen it mid-round.
No, I kind of looked it up to see, and I think there's been 12 times, but all in the early UFC days.
Yeah.
Nothing recent.
I think it happened with Nate Diaz and GSP, if I'm not mistaken.
But the problem, I think it was Nate. And what happened was, I think Nate was going out, and then Nick threw the towel in.
Okay.
But I think Nate was already finished. I don't even think the ref saw the towel, but it still would have, I guess.
Oh, was it the Thompson fight maybe where he got head-kicked?
Yes, it was the Thompson fight. Nick ended up throwing the towel in, but I saw the angle of it, and the ref didn't see it at that point. And
I was thinking of the wrong GSP fight. It was GSP Penn. They threw in the towel after the fourth round, I believe, because Penn was just getting roughed up.
Did he just come out, or they actually physically threw the towel?
I think they actually threw in the towel.
Yeah.
But that wasn't mid-round. Like, I don't think I've seen it happen mid-round. I can't remember in my head.
Well, the biggest thing with that is the fighter never wants to give up. We're fighters. We're athletes. We're warriors. And the will to win takes over anything. And even in my world title fight, the fifth round of my world title fight, a lot of people said they could have thrown the towel. But even before that fight, I looked at my corner and my manager, Costa Cladianos, I said to him, never throw in the towel. I don't care what happens, to me in this fight, never throw in the towel. I've trained my whole life for this moment. The last thing I want is to, you guys to give up for me. And if they would have thrown it in, I wouldn't have been the world champion that I became. So I'm happy they didn't. But that was also my last fight in my career. So it's tough. And I mean, as an athlete, I know the athlete will never want their corner to throw in. But I know when we were texting back and forth, you have it right. It's the referee that really has to do the job before it even gets to the corner. And even if it comes in, and there's a lot of fighters you'll see give up themselves, and they give up. They don't want to come out. But when you have that real warrior spirit, there's no backing. Like, you got to look at Gilbert Melendez. That's warrior spirit. Which other fighters would have continued to fight after that?
Right.
Very few.
The ref let him continue.
He showed warrior spirit. He went. But they're never going to give up. So the referee does have to do the job for the corner and for the athlete.
Now, I'm not sure if you caught this, but the referee of the Tucker fight was actually the head referee for the Edmonton Commission.
He probably knew Gavin from a long time.
No, he was just nowhere to be found afterwards. They pulled him. They didn't let him ref any fights after that. And they also didn't let the judge, who gave that fight a 29-28, judge any more fights on that card.
Wow.
No, because how could that fight be a 29-28, the Tucker and Glenn fight? It was one of the most lopsided fights ever. If you look at the other two scorecards, one of them was a 10-7 round.
You have to give it at least a 10-8.
How often do you see a 10-7 round in MMA? Yeah. It's unheard of, but that was a 10-7 round.
But I know Gavin came out, and he doesn't blame the ref at all. He came out and says, hey, you know, like, he let me go out on my shield. Which, I mean, a lot of fighters, you don't want to go out on their shield, if anything, right? It's just, it's the old school warrior mentality. And a lot of people who are listening, probably, if you're not a true athlete in any sport, it's not just, you know, I'm not going to say combat sports, but when you dedicate your whole life all day, every day, it's all you think about, it's what you eat, it's what you breathe, you don't want to give up. So it shouldn't be like that. But hearing what happened was crazy, just to show how tough Gavin Tucker was. He says he has 4 broken bones in his face. Which started in the first round, which is crazy. And he came out on his social media to say this. He said he has, I have 2 fractured orbitals. Jeez. And a vertical fracture on my jaw from the CT scan. But the first...
Those could be career-ending injuries.
Well,
that's fractured orbitals is no joke.
Yeah, and 4 broken bones in his face.
Yeah.
You know, between his jaw and his orbital. And
crazy.
But the last thing he says, nothing hurts more than the broken heart. You know, so it just shows that, you know, he says, you know, be prepared for Tucker 2.0, and I hope so. And for me now, looking back at other athletes in their career, and see, people always ask me, do you go in there and do you want to kill your opponent? Like, you want to hurt them so bad. And there's a lot of fighters who go in there and build up this crap in their head where they're like, this guy, you know, murdered my family. It sounds ridiculous, mm-hmm. but a lot of fighters make up these stories to get them so, you know, amped up and aggressive for this fight. But there's other fighters, like, you know, if you, like, we had Antonio Carvalho and myself, and I'm sure GSP and all these other real martial artists, we want our opponents to fight another day, to live another day, to have a chance to, you know, make a living. We don't want to hurt our opponent where they can't. Yes, we want to win, but the after effect is what really matters to us.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That was a tough fight to watch, though.
It was. It was. Especially after talking to him. And I just think he got way too excited. The Halifax,
the
Edmonton
there.
Crowd. No,
the
he just
wasn't
gave,
there. If you looked at the last fight.
Came too aggressive.
I think he just had a game plan that he thought was going to work against the taller opponent. He didn't stray from it, and he probably should have strayed from it when it wasn't working early on.
And he wasted all his energy in that first round trying.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing spinning things. It's just, I mean, I guarantee you he's learned a lot from it. So
yeah,
let's hope we see that 2.0. Let's hope we see 3.0. I want to see Gavin Tucker, you know, win titles and have a great career. So
yeah, first loss of his career.
Speedy recovery for Gavin.
So Rafael Dos Anjos, he had a very good victory. As we mentioned, he got a performance bonus for finishing Neil Magny. Do you think he's next in line for a title shot? He thinks he is, but he was ranked 10th going into this fight, whereas Magny was ranked 6th. So I don't think it's going to move him into the top 5.
But this is only his second
fight. But he's a former champion at lightweight.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
A lot of their champions are getting thrown in right for titles. I wouldn't mind seeing him a few more. And I know there's a lot of talk which people are saying Robbie Lawler has a potential, which I don't mind either. I mean, I think anyone who RDA fights, I'm going to be excited for. You know, whether it's Woodley, which I think he's got an amazing shot for, but you have Woodley now waiting for the GSP Bisping. He wants these bigger super fights. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I asked Dos Anjos if he was willing to take another fight, but he says he wants to just relax and wait for a title shot. And I'm thinking, you know, you were just ranked 10th. I don't know how soon it's going to be for you. But that being said, he was offered the title fight if Maya was unable to fight in July, if Maya said, I'm not going to do it. And he would have gotten that title shot. So he's clearly on the minds of
those
at the head of Zuffa that are making these title fights.
What do you think? Should he do it? Should he get it?
I think we need to just see how certain things play out first. I think we need to see what happens with Lawler if he fights again. We need to see what happens with Covington and Demian Maia. There's just a lot of play. We need to see what happens with Masvidal and Thompson, because if Masvidal beats Thompson, suddenly he's in the mix.
Yeah.
And that's what Woodley said. He says, I'm gonna sit back and see how the division shakes out.
Well, it's fair. I mean, he has so many fights and everyone on his back, and he wants those super fights as well. I don't know. It's interesting
now.
There's
just no path to GSP right now for him. I mean, he says he'll move up to middleweight. That's fine. But if GSP beats Bisping, then he's probably going to fight Whitaker next, because Whitaker's the interim champion.
Yeah, it'd be way too long.
If GSP loses, he won't fight again. So
yeah. They'll force Woodley to fight before.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, or just pay him more, you know. But Woodley's an active champion. Like, that's the thing about Woodley. The reason he's sitting back is because he got injured. So we'll have to see. Again, I think that's an interesting division right now. I think Dos Anjos is in the mix. Covington, if he beats Maia, is in the mix. If Masvidal beats Thompson, he's in the mix. So there's just a lot left to shake out.
No, I agree.
We saw the picture of Gilbert Melendez's leg. You sent it to me, and I had seen it on Twitter as well. It looks pretty gruesome.
But what do you
I'm sure your leg's been like that before, though, right?
No, my opponent's legs have been like that, not mine. No, actually, no one has really. I'm the low kicker. I don't take
true.
Low kicks.
Yeah,
I'll punish.
So Mark
you.
DeBont's legs look like that. And
Mark,
Holskin's
oh yeah, and a lot of the other guys' legs look like that. Oh yeah, it's always fun seeing my opponents walk out after
back.
The event and they're getting held up by their guys, but they fight again, just as I mentioned. But I don't know, where were we there before
we got talking about the picture.
Oh, the picture, I showed all my friends, and we're trying to think which one was worse. Was it Uriah Faber's leg after Aldo, or
was really
Melendez's
bad.
Leg?
Well, the one after Faber, the reason why this isn't a fair question is Faber posted his like 2 or 3 days afterwards.
Where the swelling
was blue. Like it just looked blue.
Twice the size.
Yeah.
But yeah, that looked bad. When I saw it live, I thought he may have even fractured a bone in there for that type of swelling there.
Were you at that fight?
No. I'm talking about
when
I was watching the Melendez one.
Oh, the Melendez one.
Yeah. I thought he would.
Well, that
easily.
Hematoma was crazy.
Yeah, it came quick. And we were talking in our training sessions yesterday. We were talking about that kick a lot. And it's just all it takes is a little bit of an angle change of your foot. So now that you're blocking with the front of the shin, then the side, and that could have avoided that. But Melendez has a history of being really heavy on his front leg.
It doesn't block them either.
No.
It tends to just take leg kicks. If you looked at the landing percentage, I think it was 100% on the leg kicks.
Yeah, there's a lot of fighters who just don't care.
Yeah,
if they feel their shins are stronger.
Some coaches don't teach them. Some coaches teach them not to block.
Yeah, and
use it as
a counter, or they find it a counter. But a good low kicker with good distance control and timing, you can't block it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this could be it for Gilbert. Four fights in the last 4 years, 0-4. Yeah. Bellator could certainly use him if they wanted to stack their featherweight division up or lightweight division
up. I think he had his prime before anything, and now it's just passed. And he's trying to keep up with it, which I respect. And you know, but hopefully, you know,
he's
he
a
got
fighter.
A tough fight.
Yeah.
It's not like he had an easy fight. Like, let's give him someone a little bit more match, and I'm sure he'll put on exciting fights like he did in the past.
Yeah.
It was still an exciting fight now. We're still talking about it, how great it was, and, you know, how we stood in there, the warrior spirit. I'm sure he didn't do as well, but, hey, we're still talking about him.
Yeah, we saw two Canadians get wins on the card.
Yeah.
Sarah Morris, who we mentioned. That inverted armbar was crazy.
Yeah.
That was really well executed.
Yeah.
And then our guy, Arjun Singh Buller, who we interviewed last week.
Yeah, he was getting a lot of hype up there, too.
Yeah.
I think he was, I felt a little hesitant, you know, movements from him at first. He didn't seem like overly confident with his striking. But once he loosened up, man.
Yeah
he did really well.
Yeah.
Once he relaxed and he got comfortable being in that octagon, he just did really well. And just to see all the hype from the Indian community after, and I saw some videos that he's posted. So, you know, I'm happy for him, proud for him.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Pleased to be joined now by Colby Chaos Covington. He's 12-1 in the UFC, and he has a little bit of beef with his teammate. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, I want to ask you, I know that right now in Florida, Hurricane Irma is hitting very hard. What's going on with you right now in regards to that?
I'm actually in Virginia at the moment. You know, I came out to visit the troops, kind of give them moral support and spend some time with some real heroes. You know, people like to think that us fighters are heroes, but you know, that's just the money and fame that people like to think that we're heroes. But the real heroes are the servicemen who are sacrificing their lives for our country. So, you know, that's why I'm out here in Virginia, and I'm hoping to get home to Florida soon, actually today, but we'll see if my flight gets canceled.
Has that affected your training camp in any way, or do you have a good group of guys in Virginia?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I lost a week of training. It sucks to lose a week of training during the most important time. I know Damien's probably training real hard, training twice a day, getting ready specifically for me. But, you know, I just been, you know, sitting out here in Virginia, you know. But, you know, it's okay. You know, I enjoy coming out here, you know, losing a week of training. I'll give up a week of training to, you know, be able to see the smile I put on these servicemen's faces. You know,
that.
A lot of them were telling me I changed their life. You know, they were like, man, you changed my life today, man. I'm going to be motivated forever. I was down and out, but you gave me hope. You give me strength to keep going. So, you know, I'm okay with giving up a week of training because I'm more motivated coming out here, seeing these servicemen who are making the ultimate sacrifice, and that's their life on the line. So, you know, it's okay. I'm okay with losing this week of training.
It's pretty amazing you guys can just feed off of each other. I mean, they respect what you do. You respect what they do. You know, they're saving lives. And you guys get to, again, feel each other out and talk to each other about your experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they say we inspire them, but in turn, I feel like we're getting more inspired by them than they're inspiring me. You know, seeing the sacrifices they're making day in and day out is just, it's remarkable, man. It's really cool to see, and I'm just real thankful for this experience, and I know it's going to help me in my fight against Damian Maia on October 28th.
Well, I want to talk to you about this past weekend in Edmonton. Your teammate, Amanda Nunes, won the title. Did you watch that fight? How did you score it?
Yeah, I watched that fight. You know, I thought she clearly won three rounds. You know, I thought she won 3-2. You know, it was a really close fight. There wasn't, like, a lot done, you know. They didn't really engage that much. But, you know, she did have octagon control, and she did, you know, get the takedown. So, you know, when you're the champ, you know, you got to go out there and beat the champ. If I'm fighting Tyrone Woodley, I can't just back up the whole fight and expect to win the fight. I got to take the fight to him. I got to control the fight. I got to make sure it's clear that I won the fight because he is the champion. She is the champion. So, you know, I thought Amanda Nunes won that fight fair and square.
Another guy in your crosshairs is Rafael Dos Anjos, and I sent you an interview that I did with him because I mentioned you, and he said that you hadn't fought good enough competition, that he should be next in line for a title shot with a win. What did you think of his performance? And he says he wants to sit out and wait for a title shot now.
Sit out and wait for a title shot? The dude's 2-2 in his last four fights. He just fought the two most overrated fighters in the history of the UFC. Both the guys he just fought are at the end of their careers. Those aren't legitimate victories. You know, I don't consider those legitimate victories. So he's not. If he wants to sit out and wait a title shot, he's not going to get it. He's going to be sitting out with Robbie Lawler. He's going to be sitting out with all these other guys who think they're just going to be handed title shots. So I'm just sick of these guys. You know, I called him out in the beginning, just the entitlement factor. You know, he thinks because he's an ex-champ that you know, he's got this entitlement factor that he just is owed something. Dude, you ain't owed anything. Go out there and earn it. I'm earning it, man. I got Damian Maia next, and I'm willing to fight Robbie Lawler next. I'm willing to fight Rafael Dos Anjos next. Whoever they want to give me, I'll knock them all down until I get my title shot. You won't see me waiting and sitting on the sideline like a little girl.
See, I like that. You've been a little bit more vocal recently about wanting those big names. You're not just sitting and waiting yourself, you know? Because, I mean, you've been a part of the UFC since 2014. So for now, you're coming out there. You've got an impressive, you know, group of wins. So it's time. So I like that you're talking and being very vocal about it.
Yeah, you know, I'm being honest. Everything I've said, there's a lot of truth to it. People, if they don't see it now, they're about to see soon. You know, a lot of these people, they like to, they believe with their ears. They don't believe with their eyes. And that's what these guys need to get through their heads is that seeing is believing, you know, and reading isn't believing. So don't believe everything you read.
I think you and Maia is a perfect marriage because you're both guys that I'm sure are offered to lots of different fighters and they say no.
Yep, exactly. That was it. You know, no one wanted to fight Damian Maia. Everybody turned him down. They said, no, I don't want to fight Damian Maia. And the same thing for me. Everybody's been turning me down. RDA has been ducking me since, you know, the last 2 years. You know, the guy, he doesn't want to fight me, man. He's scared. You know, I even went up to him backstage in Singapore, said, what's up, dude? We can do this right now. What's up? Got in his face. And he walked away from me like a little bitch. So, you know, at the end of the day, he knows who owns him, and I own him. So, you know, at the end of the day, me and Damian are the most ducked fighters in the welterweight division right now. We're going to clash to see who is the best.
And when you look at this fight, I mean, you're talking about one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in MMA, and your wrestling has got to be one of the top. Do you take this fight, you know, for as a grounder, man? Because we talked before, and like, your striking is very impressive. Do you take this fight on the feet, or do you want to take it down?
I feel like I'm the most well-rounded welterweight in the world right now, and I just don't feel like anybody's going to be able to keep up with me in all the departments of MMA. So, you know, on October 28th, I'll do whatever I want to do to Damian Maia. If I want to take him down and and beat him up on the ground, I'll do that. If I want to strike with him and beat him up on the feet, I'll do that too. But you're going to have to tune in October 28th to see my game plan because I ain't giving it away today.
Well, American Top Team is your team, obviously. And you keep talking about Tyrone Woodley. Are you giving, you know, the gym owners heart palpitations by continuing to call this guy out?
No, not at all. The thing is with Tyrone Woodley is he's not American Top Team, man. Everybody says he is. I would give him maybe 10% American Top Team. The guy does his training camp to Duke Rufus. He came one time to American Top Team because, you know, he wanted to make cool with Dan Lambert and all the fighters at American Top Team. But, you know, he's not American Top Team. He's Duke Rufus now, and he doesn't even train at ATT. He trains at a branch of ATT in St. Louis, and that's only because he had an investor invest in that and buy the gym for him. So, you know, I don't really consider Tyrone Woodley American Top Team, and he's definitely not my teammate. I'm about to end that soon.
So is he never in Florida then? Does he ever come to the Florida gym and train?
He comes. I mean, he was in Florida. He came for like 3 days before his last fight, but you know, he barely comes to Florida. You know, I think that was the first time he'd been there in a year or so. So, you know, he's not American Top Team. He's not Coconut Creek coming to the main academy gym day in and day out. He's not a teammate. You know, so you know, he's the type of guy. He's always the victim, and he's just trying to play. Oh, Colby's. He's hitting on his teammates. Oh, he's a snitch. Oh, okay, yeah. Tyrone always the victim. Woodley, man, his end's near. I promise you that.
Well, Dan Lambert's your manager, if I recall. Does he ever talk to you and say, listen, you got to tone this down? He's one of our gym's champions.
No, not at all. He understands that, you know. The thing is that how are you going to say that? He was the same guy that was barking, calling for Robbie Lawler when Robbie Lawler was ACT. So he wants to act like I can't do the same, but he was doing the same to Robbie Lawler when he was in that position. So, you know, he's just acting like a hypocrite, man, to be honest. And that's why I call him a fake champ, because he's fake, man. All this stuff he's saying in the media, it's all bull crap. It doesn't have any truth to it. And, you know, it's like, it's crazy. You know, he was the same guy that was barking up the tree trying to get his title shot against Robbie Lawler. But now I'm in that same position trying to bark up the tree and get my title shot, and you're going to hate on me for that? It's just real hypocritical and fake.
I think it's part of the game, right? If you're even the same, even if you're teammates, man, you want that gold. You want that strap. So you're not just going to sit there and let your teammate hold on to it. Like, I'm that person where, man, I dreamed about that title. I want it, right?
Absolutely, man. I dreamed of that title since I was a kid, man. I've been telling my parents, all my wrestling coaches since I was 6 years old that I wanted to be world champion. And now I'm close to that position. I'm not just going to sit back and just hope the UFC is going to grant it. I'm going to go out there and make my wishes and my thoughts be well known, what I expect and what I want. He's not a teammate to me. I don't consider him a teammate. And this is a one-man sport, you know. We're not going out there doing a dual meet American Top Team versus TriStar Gym. It's an individual sport, you know. So if we have to fight our teammates, we got to fight our teammates. But we all want that number one goal, and that's the world title.
What did you think about the Robbie Lawler fallout? I mean, he was a teammate of yours. He was always at Coconut Creek at ADT. Now he's over at Combat Club. What did you think of how that played out?
I think he got his feelings hurt, you know. After Woodley beat him, he just kind of got his feelings hurt that Woodley took the strap from him, and you know, they had a picture of him up in the gym. So, you know, I think, you know, at the end of the day, you got to move on. You got to grow up. He kind of took it a little bit immature and didn't go about it the right way. But, you know, respect to Robbie Lawler. It is what it is. You know, every man feels they're entitled, or they have, you know, they feel a certain way how people, they should be treated. So he just felt treated unfairly, which he wasn't. You know, Dan Lambert treated him very fairly, but, you know, it is what it is. It's a thing of the past. He's an enemy now, so, you know, I don't really care about him anymore.
Do a lot of guys in Florida seem to be going to that Hard Knocks spot with Henry Hoof? Is that, like, a lot of tension between the two gyms?
Yeah, there's kind of always been tension because, you know, they were Black Zillions. Henry Hoof was Black Zillions, and that was the biggest rival of American Top Team. You know, they had an Ultimate Fighter about that, American Top Team versus Black Zillions. So it seems like a lot of guys from ATT are dropping off and going there. You know, they feel like that's the next step. It's another big gym in Florida. So, yeah, definitely I'd say Combat Club is enemy of the state number one.
Well, welterweight's wide open right now. There's really no surefire top contender. As you mentioned, Dos Anjos looks like he's going to wait and see what happens. Same with Lawler. I feel like right now you're coming out and trying to get it. Like, you're calling out Tyron by name. You're not pulling any punches. You're being, I guess, pretty in your face about it. And you're going after Demian Maia, who just lost the title fight after a long winning streak. Do you feel like now is your time? Now is the time where you really want to get the spotlight on yourself and try to get Tyron to want to fight you?
I feel like, you know, I don't need a belt to know I'm the best welterweight in the world. I feel like I am the best welterweight on the planet right now. And soon I'm going to send Tyron Woodley to Mars or something, because this is my planet now.
So who should we look out for on American Top Team? I know the gym is filled with killers. Is there anybody that we should keep our eyes open for?
Yeah, there's a kid, Tiago Moses. He hasn't made it to the UFC yet, but he's a killer, man. He's on his way up. You know, he just lost the fight for the title in LFA, but he's got a bright future, and he's young, and he's continuing to get better and evolve each and every day. And another kid who I train with, a kid named Johnny Eblen, he wrestled at Missouri. He's a stud, man. That kid's going to be the future of the middleweight division in the UFC, so definitely keep an eye out on Johnny Eblen.
Now, how is it to have someone like Matt Brown with you all the time? Sorry, Mike Brown. Like, as a coach, dude, and a role model? Because I know I've never met him personally, but from what other fighters are telling me, he's just like a great role model to have.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a very personable guy. He's won a world championship, so he knows what it takes to get his fighters to a world championship level of fighting. So, you know, it's awesome, man. Every time I go to fights, you know, I'm thankful that he's in my corner because he's so calm in between rounds. He's able to calm me down, get my heart rate down, just really zone in on the task at hand. So, you know, Mike Brown, I can't give him enough credit. I really do feel like he's one of the top coaches in the world, and he doesn't get enough credit. You know, if you see him, what he did day in and day out, that guy is a through and through mixed martial artist. Yep. That guy lives, eats, and sleeps and breathes fighting. I mean, the guy's crazy. He'll be waking up at 6 a.m. doing film study for all his fighters, and he won't go to bed till 10 p.m. after he's done coaching all his fighters and training his fighters. So
he's taking that fighter's mentality into coaching, which is really good to have, right? Which is what you need.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Mike Brown, man, that guy's second to none in the coaching business.
Another guy that's part of your coaching team that I found very interesting is Stevie Richards, a former WWE wrestler from the Blue World Order fame. He was a great entertainer. How did that come about? How did he get into MMA?
You know, he'd already been in American Top Team a couple times, and we'd made that relationship a while ago, and I just thought it was the right time to bring him on. You know, the guy's, you know, he's 45, he's in sick shape, he's never cheated or used steroids, he's an all-natural guy, so, you know, to have a guy like that who's just a hard worker and who's been there, you know, he's won world championships, so he knows what it's like to win world championships, and he's the ultimate entertainer, so, you know, I know what the UFC wants to see, I know that I need to bring a better entertainment factor, and that's what you're going to see going forward. You're about to see us change the game in UFC, and honestly, we're going to make history together.
Does he help you with that element of it? Does he help you cut promos?
Yeah, you know, he's helping me with all elements of my game. You know, he's helping me with my strength and conditioning. He's helping me with my speaking skills, my promo skills. He's helping me and well-rounding us, and I promise you what we do together has never been seen before in the UFC, and we're about to change the face of the UFC.
Do you have a speech prepared in the event you beat Damian Maia? Do you have something in your head you want to get out there?
Oh, absolutely, man. I got some great speeches. You guys just got to stay tuned to hear those.
How do you envision your win, man? How are you seeing it? How are you playing it out?
I see myself knocking Damian Maia out cold second round. He's going to come in first round. He's going to try and take me down. He's going to be coming in hard, wasting a lot of energy. He's fighting in his hometown of Sao Paulo, Brazil, so all the pressure's on him. I'm not going to feel pressure, so... You know, I just see myself putting him out cold in that second round in retiring him like I said I would.
All right. Well, I think we've covered just about everything. You're not taking any prisoners. This seems like it's the time of Colby Covington in a division that's wide open, and you have your sights set locked on the champ, Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, make sure you tell that phony paper champ, Tyron Woodley, that he better get used to that Fox job, because once I get a hold of him, he's not going to be in this game anymore.
All right, Colby. Well, we can't thank you enough for your time. I'm sure that he will hear this because, like I said, you're not taking any prisoners. And I know you have your eyes set on the champion. You know, a lot of guys say you shouldn't look past your next opponent. But, you know, I've heard guys like Chael Sonnen say that that's how he got by in his career, is he liked looking past his opponent to the next opponent. He liked to create his own narrative, his own story. Would you say that about yourself?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I want to get people fired up about my next fight, you know. The Damian Maia fight, that's already a foregone conclusion. I've already dominated him. So, you know, I'm just looking at making sure Woodley doesn't run for me in the next fight. He's already trying to act like he deserves a money fight versus Bisping or St. Pierre. But the guy's not a money fighter. Fans don't even like watching him fight. So he needs to just man up and get ready to take this loss to me like a man.
All right, Colby. Well, can't thank you enough. We really appreciate it.
All right, thanks. But, Colby, nice to talk to you, bro. I just followed you on Instagram, so I'll be following along, my man.
All right, man. Much respect to you guys. I appreciate you guys' time, and thanks for having me on.
Wow, Colby Covington taking no prisoners. You know, I find it very interesting that he's going after a guy that's, I guess, tied to his gym. He says that Tyron's barely ever at the location in Florida, but at the same time, that's a ballsy move.
It's a very bold, you know, comments he's coming out with, but he wants a title shot. I mean, I have always looked at it as like that GSP, Rory McDonald, like they always trained together, same weight class. So I always wondered how it would go, because you got to think the person who's in the shadow wants a world title. That's why we're in the sport. So it just so happened that he knows the champion. So you have to sometimes put that aside.
Yeah, and eventually Rory got his chance, but it fell a little bit short, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And you look at Cain and Daniel Cormier, another good example. Daniel moved down to light heavyweight because he didn't want to interfere with Cain's title run.
Yeah, and it happens a lot in camps, and a lot of fighters have different opinions. Some will say, like, yeah, I'll fight my friend. Others are like, you know what, I'm going to stay away from it. So I think it's the fighter who kind of decides, but I'm a very friendly person. I don't want to fight my friend. So that's just my opinion. But now you put my glory world title on the line. I'm like, I don't know how good my friendship is anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's for the sport at the end of the day.
Did you ever enter any sort of situations like that where you were booked?
No, I've never had to.
Okay.
Never had to. Never had to.
Well, this weekend.
I don't think I want to anyway, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I can't imagine. Someone that you have a bond with, it seems
maybe
weird.
We'll spar one day, Aaron. Who knows?
I would highly doubt that. You have a blindfold and some... Actually, your arms tied behind your back, you'd still catch me at some point. I can only run so far. You'll use your nose. You'll sniff me out.
But you've been doing martial arts, so we don't know. You're hiding it.
Everybody's got to be careful. You never know.
Once the
cuffs are off, it's when all bets are off.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing cuffs. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. All right. UFC Fight Night Pittsburgh. About a four-hour drive from here if you want to go and travel from Toronto to Pittsburgh. And if you're listening in Ottawa, hello to you as well. We're on TSN.
Welcome.
Yeah, TSN 1050 radio, TSN 1200 in Ottawa, so thank you for tuning in. UFC Fight Night in Pittsburgh. This is a good card. I think that there are a lot of fights on here with names that the layman isn't really familiar with, but people that will turn heads. So we'll start at the top of the card. We got Luke Rockhold versus David Branch. David Branch, a two-division champion for World Series of Fighting, fought back in May against Christoph Jotko in a pretty pedestrian three-round win where he was the underdog, and now he's a big underdog against the former champion Luke Rockhold, fighting for the first time since capturing the belt from Michael Bisping.
Yeah, Luke Rockhold was saying no one wanted to fight him, and it's kind of crazy to see Branch just coming back to the UFC and getting a big profile fight like this. But David Branch is legit. Like, he's going to come in. He's going to scrap. He's got good wrestling, a lot of good power. Is Luke Rockhold on a different level? Could be. Like, I mean, you got to think he's had an impressive win streak, you know.
Before
he was the champion before losing to Michael Bisping again. But he also beat Michael Bisping. So I think Luke Rockhold is such a talented athlete. And he feels he's got the advantage in pushing the pace, where David Branch thinks he's going to push the pace. Branch has worked with a lot of my friends in New York. Even if you watch his countdown video, he's actually kicking pads with one of my former opponents. So it's kind of cool.
Which one?
Sean Hines.
Okay.
So in that countdown, Sean Hines is a Muay Thai coach helping him. I know my boy OT, Onion Topic, has been holding pads for him, helping him out. So a lot of the kickboxing community is helping him, but that's the one thing Luke Rockhold has, is kickboxing is incredible. And he also works with Henry Hoof now, who's, you know, one of the most popular kickboxers in MMA. So who knows?
Yeah, going between ADT and Combat Club. Wow. Yeah. That's pretty solid. I think Rockhold's just better everywhere. And if this fight starts getting gritty and wrestling gets involved, that's the kind of fight that Branch is going to want. But if it remains a striking fight and Rockhold can keep distance, I just don't see how Branch is going to have a good shot at beating
him. And both of them were like multiple champions in other organizations where, you know, Rockhold was dominant in Strikeforce. He was just a dominant champion where, you know, World Series of Fighting, I don't think has seen another champion other than Branch, who not only is a two-division champion, but he's defended the belts in both divisions as well. So, but you got to look at the level of competition. You know, World Series of Fighters does not have the list of names that Luke Rockhold recently beat, like Weidmans, the Machidas, the Bispings, the Tim Boches, Belforts. So the higher level of recent opponents obviously favors Rockhold. So that's a definite big advantage for him.
And Branch also hasn't lost in years, you know? So
I think his last loss was Anthony Johnson.
Yeah, and that was a long time ago.
That was May 25th, 2012.
And Johnson's a far bigger man than David Branch is also.
Yeah.
That was 2012?
2012.
Wow.
Five years.
5 years.
Last loss.
Mike Perry, Thiago Alves. Mike Perry's a guy who shows a great deal of striking prowess against a guy in Alves who I think is getting a little bit up there. The weird thing about Alves is he tried to fight at lightweight, and he's one of the bigger welterweights. He could not make that weight cut. But
yeah, the Dolce diet didn't help him that time.
Yeah, then Alves came back at welterweight and put Patrick Cote's career to an end. So he's got some momentum back, as does Mike Perry. So this will be a really interesting fight. I like this co-main event a lot.
A lot of back and forth striking. Thiago Alves got some vicious low kicks, which I'm a big fan of, obviously. But hopefully Thiago Alves, which surprised me, like, he had a layoff with brain surgery,
Yeah.
And I just to see him come back and been doing so well, it's just, you know, it's crazy.
It's interesting to see. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of guys on this card that are people that you need to keep your eye on. Like Gregor Gillespie is I believe he was an NCAA championship wrestler. He was at the very least an All-American, has great wrestling credentials. Kamaru Usman is one of the top up-and-coming guys at welterweight.
I've heard big things about him.
Yeah, I remember watching him on The Ultimate Fighter. It was the season actually we spoke to Colby Covington about the Black Zillions versus American Top Team season. He was one of the guys from Black Zillions who looked fantastic. And I saw Faraz Zahabi. He was here, and I said, this Usman reminds me a lot of GSP.
Yeah, he's very talented. I think he even does a lot of MMA commentary, too,
yeah.
I think,
yeah,
which is some good. So he's learning. He's studying fights. He's a student of the game, which, yeah, he's going to do a lot of damage. But you also have Hector Lombard on the card, which is a huge draw. What surprised me was on the prelims. Like, Uriah Hall has just been thrown down now at
Jocko.
The bottom.
Those are two guys that were looking to get up there in the middleweight division.
Yeah, Jocko just lost to Branch, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Uriah Hall, man, he was at the top for so many years, and now they're just putting him near the.
Well, he's been
so
inconsistent. Like he wins and loses and wins, and he hasn't been as exciting as people had hoped. Like on The Ultimate Fighter, he was crushing guys. And then there's also Luke Sanders, another guy that I think is a big up-and-comer in the UFC. So this is a good card. This is a card that is absolutely worth watching.
Felipe Arentes, he fought Antonio Carvalho, who we had on recently.
That's
so
right.
A lot of big names. Jason Sago, again.
Yeah,
local
one of the Canadians.
Yeah.
And Olivier Aubin-Mercier is another guy that I think is a really good fighter. And Tony Martin's a skilled opponent. That's a close fight.
But you got to think about it. Not many huge names, but like we just saw at 215, That card performed.
Yeah.
All the fights were great. I mean, it's not always the stacked cards that end up putting out the best fights. So these are the type of cards where, you know, these new fighters, they have, you know, nothing to lose in the world to gain. So these are the type of cards that always end up performing.
Yeah, this is a sneaky good card. I would recommend people watch it if you're open to watching great MMA, which I'm sure you are if you're listening to the show. All right, so Rockhold, he had some statements on GSP versus Bisping recently on MMA Junkie Radio. Here are some of his quotes. I'm blank, tired of waiting. I'm not blanking around. I'm tired of, okay, there's too many expletives here. But I'm tired of talking about it. I'm coming with a vengeance. I think George St. Pierre is a joke. I still don't have faith that George makes it to the fight, so we'll see what happens. Calling GSP a joke, that's pretty harsh.
But is it the start of, hey, I want the winner? Is this what the trash talk is?
Yeah, but what's the point of that? Because we've got an interim champion, right? Like Whitaker's there sitting on the sidelines. I think calling out GSP right now is one of the most futile things you can do. Like, what's the point?
Yeah. Well,
his
everyone
next
just
two
wants
fights
his name.
Are lined up.
Well, let's see how his pay-per-view does before you start calling him out. If you think it's the money fight, let's see how his pay-per-view does.
You mean for Rockhold?
For when GSP fights Bisping.
Yeah. That's
because
true.
A lot of people think GSP is not the pay-per-view draw he used to be.
So, although, you know, if we look at UFC 217, another big thing that happened just today, actually, Joanna Jędrzejczyk to defend against Rose Namajunas, three title fights on that card, just like last year. This is a pretty stacked card.
Rose.
But, you know, Conor was headlining last year, and that's where a lot of the buys come from. The thing I like about this card is that GSP and Bisping are from the old guard.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people that haven't watched the sport in many years that were big GSP fans will look at it and say, okay, I recognize the name Bisping, so this is something I want to watch. I want to see how he does at another weight class. He can win two titles here. There's a lot of stories here that could build this pay-per-view up. And then you look at Dillashaw and Garbrandt, and that might be one of the highest-level fights you can make in the UFC right now.
I agree.
Now.
That's the one I'm more excited for that fight than I am for GSP Bisping, to be honest.
Yeah. And Rose has been fantastic at strong.
Rose has been incredible.
She's tough to fight against. Like she's got so many tools in her toolbox. So that's a really good card. I think that, again, as a UFC fan, if you're a big UFC fan, that is a card that you're going to order.
217 for sure.
And a lot of people were saying this GSP versus Bisping fight shouldn't have been made. It should have been a different middleweight. You know, they should follow the hierarchy of the division. I don't agree with that.
No, I think
I haven't for a long time.
Yeah, GSP is legit. I feel now, and you ask anyone who's a casual MMA fan, you ask them, you know, have you been following the UFC? And a lot of them give the same answer. There's just too many fights, too many of this. So what stands out? And right now, these super fights are standing out. Freakish fights. So a lot of these guys want to jump on these catch fights, these super fights. And I don't blame them. It seems to be where all the excitement is right now.
Well, it's weird. I spoke to Demetrius Johnson, actually, at Media Day last week. And he said he thinks there's too many cards. He thinks that his fights don't get promoted because there are just too many cards to promote.
Absolutely.
And it gets lost in the shuffle.
And if you think all of these countdowns, like we just had a show last week, there's a countdown coming up, all the pre-fight shows, it's hard to keep up to it. Like, hey, I'm full-time martial arts. I wake up, I do it all day, every day I go to bed doing it. So I have the time to do it. But if you're working a regular 9-to-5 job and, you know, you come home and then you go train, where's the time to follow all these fights and to keep up with all the fighters? And what made UFC so popular was them promoting the fighters. And you had the Ultimate Fighters, and we got to know the fighters. We got to know about their, you know, their lives. And that's what attached the fans to the athlete. And we don't have that as often right now.
We've got 16 cards in 18 weeks, which is pretty crazy. That's like a football season, pretty much. That's like an NFL football season. You got your bye week, and then you've got maybe your team makes the playoffs. Like, that's a big commitment for the rest of the year if you're not that into it. But I am that into it, and I will watch all of them, and I'm excited about it. I don't mind too many cards. No such thing as too much of a good thing is fine with me.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah. Fighting is fighting for me. I like it.
And if some people only want to watch the pay-per-views or only want to watch the Fox cards, that's fine too.
As long as everyone continues to watch Glory Kickboxing as well, I'm okay with it.
You
got to watch
let's
both.
Let's keep Joe's checks make sure that they're cashing
watch
as
Glory
well.
Kickboxing. I still don't understand. We'll have a long conversation. How people boo the ground game, and then we have a product of kickboxing for them.
There is no ground game.
There is no ground game. Yeah. Guys, let's watch it. Let's get to it.
It is awesome. I'll vouch for Glory for sure. Glory is awesome.
It is.
Fantastic to watch. I'd much rather watch that than, you know, these submission submission grappling tournaments and grappling based shows.
Well, based on excitement and value, for sure.
But yeah, the stand-up is just so much more exciting.
Yeah. I'm biased. I'm going to say obviously I agree.
Another thing that we learned this weekend, I spoke to Stipe Miocic on Friday. And he said he's open to fight Francis Ngannou. He's open to fighting Kane. He thinks Kane is worth, you know, it is worth giving Kane the title shot. He's earned it because of his pedigree in the sport. Basically, he says whoever the UFC throws at him, he's fine. He just wants his contract terms to be met. He's still negotiating with the organization. And he also says he'd love to test himself against Anthony Joshua.
See, more freak fights, right? People want those fights. They want those paydays. But yeah, no, actually, Miocic was at the last Glory event. He just seems like such a cool guy. He was so open talking to everyone. And I was actually doing broadcast with Chris Camozzi, the UFC fighter, mm-hmm. who actually signed with Glory. So we're going to have him fighting in December at Madison Square Garden. But like Stipe was just like, hey, cheering everyone, waving from the side to us. And like just super cool dude. So yeah, I didn't know, like, I never met him, but once I meet one of these guys and they're just so cool outside of the ring, that's what I like about these fighters, and he was just so open and cool. I met John Jones, and I didn't really like him. He wasn't very social with me, but Stipe, man, yeah, he's earned my respect. He's such a nice dude.
Yeah, Stipe is a nice guy, and I think heavyweights sell themselves. I think, like, him versus Ngannou is a great fight. Him versus Kane would be an interesting fight. You know, there's still cards that need filling by the end of the year. So
Stipe
I wouldn't be surprised.
A fighter who just he fights. It's exciting. So like you want whoever you put him in, he's just gonna excel. He's just gonna do well, and that's why he's moving up. And I bet you by the end of the year we're gonna be talking about Stipe being one of the pound for pound best.
Well, he'll have to beat Ngannou probably for that to happen. I think that's the fight to make. Kane says he's not gonna fight until 2018. They have pay per views to fill.
Kane,
let's get Stipe out there. Yeah. Stipe versus Ngannou would be a fun fight. The Anthony Joshua thing, I don't think the UFC wants to get back into that territory for a while.
Not this soon.
And Joshua, I think, has a fight lined up as well. So
yeah, Pulev? I think it's Pulev? In October, I believe.
You're asking the wrong guy.
There's a Russian boxer by the name Pulev.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with Anthony Joshua. He's a huge draw in Europe. And apparently the UFC, this was a rumor I saw online, might be interested in bringing Joshua into fight next year in the UFC. But,
really?
Yeah.
But there's so many fighters now wanting to go over to boxing. Yeah. But I still can't believe the hype of the purest, you know, biggest boxing fight is not even being talked about right now with that Triple G Canelo, which is shocking to me. Like I'm following it very closely, but a lot of people and a lot of my MMA friends and fans don't even know
about
this
weekend, isn't it?
It's this weekend. Yeah, it's going to be the same night, so I'm going to be trying to switch back between the two fights. But
I'll be watching the Pittsburgh card.
Yeah,
look at that.
There you go. You're not going this time, are you?
No, I don't usually go to these to the different fight night events. Although this is like a 4-hour drive, I probably could have gone, but I need to spend some time at home.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Got a family, man. Got kids.
There you go.
They need guidance.
That's it. Not just guiding us MMA listeners.
Exactly. Well, we'll guide you through what happened this weekend on next week's show. I know you're going to Glory, not next week, but the week
in
after.
About 2 weeks. Yeah, we're going to Glory 45 is in Amsterdam. Actually, October is going to be a crazy month for me. I'm off to, we have the Glory Amsterdam 45, September 30th. Then we go to China. We're going to be the first to be in mainland China. No UFC is coming after us, but we have Bigfoot Silva fighting our heavyweight champion, Rico Verhoeven, which is crazy.
I know you're stoked about that one. The highest level kickboxing match that can be made.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just crazy to me. Like,
it's a crossover fight, which is cool.
Yeah, it's a crossover fight. Hopefully, the plan is obviously to bring UFC fans into kickboxing. But Bigfoot Silva is not at his prime right now, and he's been put down a few times against the current pound-for-pound best kickboxer in the world. That's going to be a big, tough fight. But as I was mentioning to you, if Bigfoot wins, it looks bad for kickboxing. If Rico actually goes the distance, it might look bad for kickboxing. So I don't know where the win-win situation comes from.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Glory, to me, if you're a UFC fan and you watch Glory, you'll get hooked because it's just that much fun.
I always tell people, you know, you're listening to me. Go on YouTube, watch some of my fights, and you can see some of the exciting kickboxing that we have over in Glory.
If you could recommend one of your fights, what would it be?
The big one that a lot of the MMA, which got me on the Joe Rogan podcast, which is my fight with Raymond Daniels. He was a point karate world champion. So guys like Rogan loved him. And actual GSP brought him in. The TriStar, Rory McDonald brought him in, Tyrone Woodley brought him in. Because every time there's a fighter who fights Wonderboy Thompson, they bring in Raymond Daniels because they have the same point karate style, but Raymond Daniels is better. So I don't understand why they don't bring me in still, because I'm the one who knows how to beat that style. So if you're going to fight Wonderboy Thompson, I know how to beat that style. So if you're a fighter and you're fighting Thompson, call me in and I'll show you how to beat it.
But you know, I know Masvidal's agent really well. Do you want me to send him a note?
You should.
All right.
He should.
After the show.
100% he should.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in this week. Next week, we'll break down what happened on UFC Fight Night Pittsburgh. Hopefully, there's some big fight announcements coming up this week. We still have some pay-per-views to fill by the end of the year. The one in Detroit in December still has no main event. The one at the end of December has no main event. So that should be interesting to see. Joe, thanks so much, and we'll be back next week.
Awesome. I'm excited.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.